coming. This is a small group, but I think it's also a key group that has shown up, because many of you that I see deal with student services, so that's great. My name is Paula Stroni. I'll be moderating this session. I'm the Special Projects Coordinator at the Office of International Affairs. Last year at the Diversity Conference, we had our first international student panel, which actually RAM was part of. And at that session, we really explored some of the student experiences that those students have had. And the Office of International Affairs then did a follow-up with those students to really delve a little deeper into what their experiences had been and some of the challenges and obstacles, and perhaps identify them and try to find ways to solve them. Now, we have identified them, and we're working in addressing some of the issues that they have raised. But obviously, it is an ongoing process. From that meeting, I did have a summary of the feedback. So this is last year's information here. Now, this panel, this year, we again are going to be very openly and candidly talking about their student experiences. But really, what I'm hoping that this session will bring forth is how students can make allies right from the get-go so that they can have a really great experience at the University of Toronto. So it's not, you know, you fell through the gaps, or, you know, you weren't involved, or how can we basically reach out to the students and consciously bring them in to the university community. So I'm going to introduce the panel today. Nazna Panjwani was born in India and came to UVic as an international student in 2005. She completed her first undergraduate degree in biology and is now a permanent resident. She is back at UVic to complete her second degree in computer science. Nazna currently works on diversity issues with Anissa St. Pierre in engineering, who's the diversity coordinator. Chrissy Yang is from China and is currently completing her master's degree in education and leadership. This is her second year at UVic as an international student, and she's actively involved in the community. She's the volunteer coordinator at the Victoria Immigrant and Refugee Center Society, or VERCS, and is a career ambassador for cooperative education and career services at UVic. Ram Mayapan was born and raised in India. As I mentioned, Ram was a part of the panel from last year. He'll be completing his mathematics and business minor degree this term. He's planning on going to law school soon. And he was president of the Mathematics and Statistics Course Union and the Indian Students Association. He's also a TA in the math department and currently works with the UVic Athletics and Recreation. He's on the varsity field hockey team. And Robert Pahoom, who's originally from Los Angeles, California. He's in his fourth and final year at UVic and will be graduating with a Bachelor of Arts in English this spring. For the past 3 years, he has been a community leader within UVic's Residence Life program, helping first year residents with their transition into university living. So I'm gonna ask some questions, and we will have a session at the very end for question and answer. But if you have a lot of questions, then definitely feel free to ask them. But to put things into context, I'm going to ask each of you to let us know a little bit more about yourselves and potentially your educational experience. And at the same time, once you talk about that, if you could tell us how you heard about UVic and why you chose UVic. Maybe start with Nancy.
Okay. So as Paula mentioned, I came to Victoria in 2005. Before coming to Victoria, I was actually in US, and I was going to junior college. I was finishing my first 2 years of my degree, and because I was an international student, it was getting very expensive to go to university, so I decided to transfer my credits to a university in Canada. So all I did was I did a search in Google, and UVic just came up, and of course University of Victoria, and I'd never heard of Victoria, so that was my another search, you know. So then it was close to Vancouver, so then I checked the weather, I checked the tuition, and everything seemed pretty reasonable, so that's why I decided to come here. That's the only reason.
The weather.
Yeah, the weather, yeah, and the tuition. It was pretty low as compared to other universities, yeah. So that was another reason.
And the fact that all your credits transferred.
And the fact that my credits transferred, I didn't have to take an English course, so yes.
Great.
Hi, I'm Chrissy, and I came here in 2009, and I finished my undergrad at in China, majoring in English literature. So after that, I was kind of like an English teacher, and I'm so into education field. I'm thinking, wow, it's great. And my mom said, okay, why not just continue your, you know, further study and maybe go abroad to broaden your horizon. And then I said, okay, I can do that. And then I decided to go abroad. And so which country to choose? Okay, Canada. And because as Namna said, and it's really the reasonable the tuition fee for, especially for graduate student. And then after that, there's a major called Education and Leadership just comes out. And it's the combination is so fascinating and just arise my interest. I said, okay, I can do that. And then I applied for UVic and also University of Toronto, but I got the admission from UVic first, and then I have never been here in Victoria, right? So I searched, okay, how is Victoria like? It is so pretty. I said, okay, let's go. And then after I got my student visa, 2 days later, I'm here. So yeah, it's very interesting.
I was originally planning to go to school in the States, and due to some logistical reasons, I couldn't make my admissions in time. And then the only applications that I could meet were to some colleges in Canada. And then VIU ended up processing my application in 6 days and sending a response. So I thought, okay, I might as well start here. It's in the western part of Canada, less now. Nothing much to worry about, and a good place to start, smaller classrooms and such. And then there's easier access to UBC and UVic. It's one of the two constraints. I chose UBC over UVic my first attempt when I was admitted to both schools, but I had initially deferred my applications to UVic as well. And I didn't enjoy living in Vancouver as much. I grew up in a very big city, and I didn't want to live the same kind of lifestyle for a little bit longer, at least while I was in school. So, and then I found Victoria was a lot more interesting. The Department of Mathematics was very helpful in transferring all my credits and everything. So, yeah, it was easy to transition to come to UVic. And I like the city a lot more than living in Vancouver.
Yeah. When I was in my senior year of high school in the States, I was really originally attempted to do what all my friends were doing, applying to all the UCs and just seeing where I got in. And then at a college fair near my home, there was a representative from University of Victoria. So my mom and I started chatting with them because Canada seemed like a really interesting choice and something I never really thought about before. So I looked into UVic, and I thought, oh wow, this place is beautiful, and it looks kind of like California a little bit. They didn't show me any pictures of what it looked like, you know, other than in the spring. And then what I think really sold me on University of Victoria is in November of your senior year in high school in the States is it's hell, for lack of a better word, because you are writing admissions essay after admissions essay after admissions essay. They're worded in such a way that they're pretty much the same essay, just slightly different, so you can't use the same one over and over again. And then I looked at UVic's application, and they just wanted my GPA, my SAT scores, and a $100 application fee. And I think, and I thought to myself, you know what, this is the place for me. And then, yeah, 4 years later.
Great, thanks guys, that really helps put things into context for us. Now, some of you have mentioned your past education system, but Ram, you had an interesting education system back home, didn't you? I think you might have missed that, letting us know a little bit.
Finished my high school, I hadn't started college because of the logistical reason I couldn't make it to the States. I started out at a college and it was a lot more involved, and in terms of the academic setup, they were a very high-ranked institution that actually bothered about how their students went to school, what they learned, not just in terms of academics, but also in co-curricular activities and all that. So I don't know if I want to get into the specifics right away, probably a little bit in detail when we talk further, I guess.
Now, if you could let us know a little bit more about how you felt upon arrival, and again, if you could each answer this, and some of the challenges you faced, if any, and coping with moving to a new country for some of you, and just dealing with a new institution. Maybe Nazma, we will start with you again.
So for me, coming to Canada was not as terrible because I had spent 10 years in U.S. I attended high school there. I attended 2 years of college and so on. So really, I did not have a language barrier, and because I knew I was used to the academic life, the system in US. It wasn't much of a change. Like, I knew what GPA was. I knew what credits were. I knew the structure, the organizational structure and stuff like that. So it wasn't that terrible for me. Getting used to the weather, finding friends, all the normal stuff. Yeah, it took a while, but it wasn't that challenging for me, to be honest. Yeah.
And if you could actually talk about whether you participated in the orientation session that is offered by UVic.
I never did. Up to this point, I never did.
In 2009, thanks to the technology, there's kind of like thing called Chinese Facebook. So there's a lot of Chinese students here at UVic on that website. So I can, you know, search some friends and to say, hi, I'm a new student here. Would you like to help me out? You know, drive me from airport to, you know, find a housing place. That's the most important thing when you're moving to a new country, right? So the students there, the friends are very, very helpful. And a friend of mine picked me up at the airport and then find me a house to live. And then right on. So that's great. But I missed the orientation because my student visa arrived kind of late. So I came here in September 9th, I believe. And so the orientation just has passed. And then I went to the office in EPLS. And the office there, the secretary called Gloria, who is so helpful. And then to just go through everything with me. So it's just lucky me. And then, yeah, not that difficult for me for the very beginning. So, yeah. Education, psychology, and leadership. So, because there's a small portion of graduate students there, so the secretary there can, you know, can focus on students to help them out. So I think that's great, because yeah, they just know who you are and then they can help you out.
My transition was really enjoyable. Like, it was a completely different experience. I knew I wanted to move from UBC to here, and I traveled quite a bit, so moving to a different country wasn't really a hard thing. So I'd been in Europe for a while and all that, and I'd been really involved in high school, so just coming into here, I knew what I wanted to do. As soon as I got admitted, I looked up what were their intramurals or their sports teams, clubs, and everything. So I actually instantly, even before registering with classes, I was registered with the math and statistics course union and sent an email to the coach of the field hockey team. So that kind of involvement wasn't very hard, and UVic was very informative, and the math department was very helpful. Like, even I was not in the country when I did my transcripts and all that, and the faculty members were very helpful in doing all the help, or actually the processing for me, which probably another institution wouldn't have never done. Yeah, the transition wasn't hard, and I guess I'd been in VIU, so I traveled to visit friends at UVic and such, so even the campus wasn't really hard to accommodate. And I lived with the host family for the first 3 months, so understanding Victoria, traveling around, knowing how to shop here or do any of the new minuscule things that you need for a survival in the city wasn't very hard. So
in high school I wasn't really good at fitting in. Yes and no, it was a big school, but I figured, well, in university, I'm just going to jump in feet first, because I figure you can reinvent yourself in university, and that's really what it's all about. So my mom registered me for everything, because she wanted me to have that experience. So I got here, I think, 3 weeks before school started, moved into my residence building, met my RA, who was ecstatic to see me because I was the first resident that he had, introduced himself to me and my family that came up with me, and then really had a really close connection after that. He's still one of my best friends. And then I went to the international student orientation first, where everyone's like, "Wait, why are you here? You're from Los Angeles. You're from the States. You're pretty much Canadian anyway." I didn't get that until then, so it was kind of a nice welcome. But and then I also went to the new student orientation as well. So it was kind of orientation after orientation, after orientation, and it was a really nice transition because you met a lot of people, a lot of from various groups and various backgrounds. So UVic felt like such a really warm and friendly place that I just felt right in, fell right into the cracks. Anyway, in a good way. And it was a great experience overall, all around.
Okay, now when we met before, we did discuss some of the challenges that you all faced, both socially and with academics. And I was hoping that you guys could maybe touch upon those a little bit, whether it's participation in class, policies, rules and regulations, expectations, how the courses are structured. Maybe you could each talk a little bit about that.
So, well, the good thing about coming here was that most of my credits actually transferred. So I was admitted as a second year student, and I didn't have any English requirements. So that was a very good thing. The one difficulty I had was because I came here in January, and as Paula mentioned that my first degree was in biology, the way it works is that certain courses are offered in certain semesters. So I missed taking the second year courses that were actually prerequisites for further courses, third year and fourth year courses. So I missed that. So basically to take that course again, I had to wait for one more year. So that created a lot of difficulties for me, especially financially, because there were times when I was only taking two courses per semester. And I kind of felt like I was wasting extra money on fees and health insurance and stuff like that, right? So that was one difficulty that I had. Another thing about biology, now that I compared with computer science, is that some of the second year labs were extremely crowded. And I remember working with sometimes six students just per lab station. So it was really, I kind of felt like it was a waste of my money because one person would just take over everything and the others would have to just stand and watch. So I kind of felt like I didn't get to learn much. You know, I didn't get to be more involved. So that was another difficulty. As far as getting help from professors is concerned, most of my professors were great and I had a very good relationship with them. So, I mean, that was really, that went well. So, yeah.
I think international students struggles more is that they need to deal with more things like native Canadian. So like student visa, like everything, you know, like MSP and everything about that. So it's great IESS office, you know, they provide, you know, very, very neat help there and with different brochures, pamphlet you can take and then do step by step. And then there's a great program they have, it's called Buddy Program, which I met two buddies there, and the one is a Canadian, one is actually is in my department in education field, and also she is from China as well. So based on that friendship, and they helped me a lot. One helped me how to fit in with the Canadians, like the sense how the life is here. The other one helped me in my academic, you know, problem. Sometimes that's because of her. She warned me that, okay, as a graduate student, you need to get your scores higher than B, or you just, you know, you can't pass. And I said, what? Higher than B? And that's a great warning. So afterwards, I hear some students get problematic just to have, especially international student, get a C+ or B-. That's problematic as a graduate student. That's a good heads up, because as somebody moving from another country, you may don't know the sense of the system here, how to do things, and even how to, what I experienced, which is so interesting, the group discussion. So when I was in China, in the university there, and you know, group discussion is a small portion of that, and the students may just discuss a little bit, and then like professor has a fixed way how to lead you in her way or his way. But here, it means that group discussion is so more important, and then you can create more branches there. And then sometimes professor can, okay, we can follow up with this branch and then explore more, which can interest you more. So like the, I think students are more getting involved at class, and also research after work is very important after class, and the students just, because that one is interesting, so they can do something more compared to like, okay, that's the way on the syllabus we need to follow that. So that's a different thing I feel, but yeah, it's great. Mm-hmm.
Well, to me personally, it was not much of a trouble because one, I like to play a role in something all the time, so. Another, not to lie, I like attention. So I just got myself involved in as many things I wanted to and forced my way at times. But the difficulty that I had in was understanding that UWIC either never connected all its systems or never marketed itself to a lot of students. say, for instance, like the international student orientation or other student orientations doesn't necessarily talk about all services that UWIC offer. And like a lot of the students I've worked with in the past as a peer helper or with the Indian Student Association or the Mathematics Course Union, they don't know about the different services that are offered on campus, like the Amman's Person, the Writing Center, the Career Services Center. Like I had a friend, like I was actually telling Paula that he didn't know what course he needed to graduate. He actually had fulfilled all the requirements. He just didn't know he could graduate. And he was on school for another extra term just because he didn't know. So students could take the responsibility. I understand you're grown enough, you're in a post-secondary institution, but when you're in a post-secondary institution, I guess the whole idea is for you to create a level playing field. So to assume the institution takes a little bit of responsibility in connecting all those matters and getting students who are not necessarily ready to push themselves to be pushed by the institution, I guess. So that kind of like, I never saw UWIC market itself as much or connect itself. Like, to me, it seemed as if UWIC was happy where they were rather than compare themselves to other institutions.
I didn't face as many challenges as a lot of international students because I'm a native English speaker, so that was kind of, I didn't have to learn a new language to come here. It was very easy for me to transition in. I had a few little colloquialism differences when I first moved here that kind of caused a little bit of trouble just because of my misunderstanding, but nothing big, you know. Poutine was really interesting to discover. I didn't really face many challenges. In fact, I had a lot of, it was a lot easier for me to transition into school because in the States, or at least in Los Angeles anyway, if you're in high school, you're able to take courses at community college for free. You just pay for books. So by the time I graduated high school, I was almost a second year in regards to my credits, and UWIC accepted every one of my transfer credits, including some of the more obscure classes that I really don't think I should have gotten credit for. But go UWIC. One challenge I think has been really big is, I think Ram kind of mentioned this, was kind of like a lack of communication between the university and the students. I think that it could be a lot clearer on what you can do. I think my main problem has actually come up this year is in being able to speak to counselors about graduating. You kind of have to get there at 8 a.m. those 3 days out of the week, or else you were rather SOL for speaking to a counselor. And you know, I totally understand that, but at the same time, it's really hard to do, especially if you're taking classes early in the morning or even late in the afternoon and you're, you know, working at night, so you're sleeping in and trying to, you know, make up for that lack of sleep. So it would have been really nice to make actual appointments instead of drop-in appointments, just so you're able to actually speak to a person instead of corresponding by email, which, while really helpful, was still a bit of a pain because you're checking your email address every like 5 minutes saying, oh, has she replied? No, am I graduating? There's just a lot of stress involving that. But otherwise, I've had a really great time at UWIC, and any challenges that I faced have been really helpful, mainly because of my job. I'm given a wealth of knowledge and insight into the school that I don't think many people have. Because, you know, during community leader training, you're pretty much told, here are all the resources you have available to you. Tell your residents about it. And I think if I didn't have that knowledge, it would have been a lot more difficult.
So maybe we could all talk about now how you think we could improve the system. You've all sort of addressed some of the challenges. I know when we spoke, there were a lot more issues that came up, but maybe we could really focus now on how to create those allies. And I know, you know, you coming and having stayed in residence was a big help because you got, you know, three orientations, or at least two orientations. Then becoming a community leader within residence life has also been instrumental in getting you involved making you knowledgeable about what's offered. But perhaps if we could just talk about how we could help students create connections. And Ram, I'm specifically thinking about what the Indian Student Association has taken on as some of the roles, and what you feel could be done to really just reach out to those students to just make it the best experience that you could offer. So maybe Robert will start with you now.
Okay. Well, I think the best thing you could probably do for an international student is, or any student really, is have, I'm shamelessly promoting Res Life here, but a community leader or someone who can help them, who's gone through the experience before and can help them through it. I know in some schools they have that really big peer tutoring. What's the word I'm looking for?
Big brother.
Yeah, they have a Don, or they have a student teacher who's given to a group of people who he or she is able to help guide. So it's more of a personal level. Mm-hmm. So I think if we could have that, you know, more of a personal connection with students rather than the entity of the university, which in itself is pretty much a bureaucracy and meant to.
Do you mean like a mentorship program or a study group? Or
maybe a combination of everything, really. Being able just to have that guiding force that isn't an institution can really help, because it brings it to a personal level. Even if it's just saying, "Hi, my name's Robert. I'm going to be here to help you for the next X time. If you have any questions, come talk to me. I'm available," you know, and just offering that availability would be really helpful, I think.
And I think it really has to be perhaps international students helping and mentoring international students, because you have to deal with so many other issues that Canadian students don't have to deal with. Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned, there's the visa requirements, there's the work visas, you know, policy regulations, and all the services that some domestic students don't tap into.
And also we have a what we call peer connections program, and so it's a group of international students and domestic students together, so they help each other, they get a lot of training, and every new student can care about. So do you think that would be something that would help you, like if you have a mentor, like a buddy that when you come in, it's kind of assigned to you, but also there's a group that you can tap into?
Oh, definitely. That'd be fantastic. And I know IESS does do quite a lot for international students, but again, it's the organization. You don't really get much of a personal feeling, I think it is a good word for that. And that, I think that personal connection can do so much more than an organization can.
Just to comment, the IESS office does have the letter program, and Christy actually referenced it. So how do you think that we could get that? Because that's exactly what it is.
Exactly.
Students mentoring students. So how could you get that information to students right off the bat?
If I may, it's just that a lot of the students don't know that such a program exists, like as an international student.
Yes.
And while I was a transfer student, I didn't even go to any of the orientations. Probably I was lost in the transition, or my package was lost in the transition. I don't know what it was, but I never went through any of the orientation until I actually was part of the orientation program a couple times. So it was completely different. Like I experienced from the person who was organizing rather than being at the other end. So what I mean is, like, it could have been part of the orientation program, or I could have been emailed as soon as I was admitted, or part of my original application, I could have been informed that you could still contact students. And
all those things are happening. Yep. So it's just somehow it's not, emails are going out, and it is mentioned at the orientation, but somehow it's not.
If I may, I think the problem is, when you do apply, you are bombarded with so much information, a lot of it being not fluff, but a lot of it just being a lot of words that you really don't have the time to sift through most of the time, so you kind of skim it. If something, you know, vital comes up, you highlight it or something. I think if it was a bit more concise, almost bulleted, I think it could be a lot easier.
At the meetings, we did discuss the international students pre-arrival guide, and actually a lot of you hadn't seen that, either because your package got lost, or I think maybe the year that Robert came, we actually weren't running a print, right? And the information is available online, but it's how you get students to go there. Mm-hmm. And in admissions, we had developed a checklist, right, that is like bang, 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 and like one front page of what to do next. But I think, you know, Robert is right. It's just such an overwhelming amount of information that even when, you know, you get emails, it's sort of like delete, because you're getting 20 emails a day and you're just trying to clean out your inbox, right?
Well, like, Paula was telling that the Indian Student Association does something as well. Like, not anything special. It's just that students who have contacted us in the past about applying to UVic, we communicate to them as to what our institution does, how our campus is, what kind of lifestyle is in Victoria, and if possible, just put them in touch with students currently in those similar programs, mm-hmm. or even with those supervisors, because there are a lot of professors. And most of the Indian students who come here are from Faculty of Sciences or Engineering, so we actually pair them up with those professors as well. And some of them have come in the recent past, like just over the past summer and such. And what we help them basically is pick them up from the airport, find them a place to live, and probably for the first week, tag them along with us so they know Victoria a little bit better, or even the university a little bit better. Something like that could be arranged. Like, it could be more formal. Like, I'm in discussion with Paula at this point. Like, right now we just communicate with students who write to us initially, but we're trying to establish a connection to all students who accept their application offer and want to come to UVic, so we can communicate to all of them and everyone gets a uniform help and a place to start, I guess. Something like that could be done overall from the institution's point of view. That's one. Another thing is just more of advertisement. It's from my past experience being at UBC and VIU. UBC ran a welcome week. It was in the summer before the spring or the fall term started. They invited all the international students or even local students in different groups, and we just came in, we attended a seminar, got to know about the university. It was not like just professors or faculty or staff members were talking. It was more students who talked to us, took us around on a campus tour. We went out for lunch with them, and some of them became friends of mine. We went to a pub later in the evening, that type of thing. So got more into the social interaction. That was an easier way for me to learn. I'd rather hear to a friend who's gone through the same rather than look at a professor who I'd be looking at a classroom. There's a huge distance between me and a faculty member compared to me and a friend who's just gone through the same, right? I'm more inclined to take up an idea that someone else has carried the same experience rather than someone who's done it 20 years back.
Yes,
can I
ask you as well?
Yeah.
So I totally relate to what Tia's saying, because I also am pretty aware of what happens in the communications of students, but I do agree that it could be a more uniform effort. And I think it is going in that direction right now, which is good news for the next incoming students. But what I'm wondering is if social media would have played a role. Like, if we, because right now we're experimenting with trying to get more on Facebook, or trying to figure out if students would use Twitter or those types of things, because we recognize that the traditional communications aren't effective.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
certainly, like, actually bring up the social media part. What we've done is when we find the house, it's hard for us to just put them in touch with the landlord, basically, but we find them roommates and we connect them to the roommates through Facebook, mm-hmm. and they just interact and they become friends even before they arrive.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually communicate to their roommates rather than just come in, land new, there is a new guy who's just going to live next door to you type thing.
When you say we, are you referring to?
The Indian Student Association at this point.
Okay.
Yeah.
And also, there's a Chinese website I know for Chinese community students, and they can just go in that site. A lot of housing information is written in Chinese, and also some pickup services or, like, you know, tour services are provided there, so students can read in their native language. That would be very easier. Another thing about body program, I think, the most thing, you know, so interesting, the events are so attractive, so most people want to go there, and then they meet friends, they hang out with friends, right? And that's a good thing. The other thing, I think, it's great to have, but to match up with a Canadian and an international student, but also if the background can be a little bit more similar, and then they can connect more, communicate more, even both on living styles and also on academic learning. So it may create huge effort for Tia to do that, but I think it's worth it. Well, because too many different backgrounds, yeah. And I think I feel people are easier to get approached to their, like, Chinese students are easier to communicate with each other. Like, they really get into their community activities more and more, rather than, you know, sometimes speaking a second language, especially for those shy students. They may just go there once and then they feel, okay, I'm down here, I really don't want to speak English, and then that might create a trouble as well.
About that. So you're saying that the matches, it's best to match similar to similar.
Mm-hmm. So, like,
are there any advantage of matching different to similar or different to different? Like, I'm just wondering. I'm just asking.
I think it's still different focus on. Okay, so the students is more into like academic help, or like, you know, they really want to get to know Canadian life. So in that case, in Canadian life case, they may want to know Canadian people, and then like to go hockey game together, to go skiing or whatever. That would be very fun. But also, still, academic is a huge part, right? So if they can have kind of like what Robert said, like a mentorship, and then they can just follow up with their studies. So still, yeah, different focuses.
No, I was just wondering, because I've never attended a student orientation before, so I was wondering if any of these services are actually mentioned during the orientation.
Yeah, all of them.
Okay.
And we also encourage every international student not only to attend the one-day orientation that's specifically geared to international students and speaks about immigration, health insurance, and the things that are really unique to the international student experience. We also want every international student to participate in the general orientation that's run by student transition services,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that they can learn about all those broad services that are attracted to every student. So we don't want to just kind of grab all the international students and put them aside.
Right,
and
right.
And meet each other.
Yeah.
We also want them to.
Right. But then out of all the international students that come to Victoria, UBEC, how many of those actually attend the orientations?
I would say maybe half.
Half.
The degree programs.
Okay.
Almost all the exchange.
So you still
and
have to...
There's a barrier in absolutely what you're saying, in communicating to them that it exists.
Yeah, exactly, because a lot of people don't know, and for me, I actually arrived 2 weeks late, and my class had already started, right? So even though I knew about the orientation, I just missed it. And I never knew about IESS until I was in my final year, until when I wanted to get post-graduation work permit, right? And I just needed some advice. So maybe I would suggest that maybe during the first few weeks, you would sort of, how during the club days, you know, how they have those tables at cafeterias and stuff in the sub, maybe you could have something like that so students would be aware of the services that are available, and not just the services that are at UBIC and also services that are actually outside, such as you have to, health insurance, MSP. I have a friend who has been in Victoria for 3 years and she doesn't know that she needs MSP, that it's actually illegal to not have one, so, yeah.
One of the things that we talked about in our pre-panel sessions was having an orientation that's run by students, right?
Yeah.
So perhaps something that could be held a little bit later on to incorporate students that do come late, and just even those students that did participate in the international student orientation or Res Life, but still, you know, were overwhelmed, they were jet lagged, they were, for whatever reason, you get it from the, you know, horse's mouth, basically,
yeah.
Right? You get it directly from the source. And it's an orientation that could be, you know, the real you did, like tips and tricks. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it just really reaching out to students once they've adjusted slightly and have their bearings, but could be introduced into some of the services and opportunities a little bit more deeply.
Like I said earlier, I'm more inclined to listen to a student rather than just hear to a professor. Hearing, I'm probably not care about what's just going into my mind, but when I'm listening, I'm actually thoughtful of what's actually happening. And Rest Life actually does a very interesting thing. Like the community leaders, they're all students, so they actually put up a skit and a small scenario type thing that really involves and teaches how to live in residence and what services they can avail. It actually makes them understand a lot more easier. It's also a little bit fun element in there, so it just makes it more memorable, I guess. Something like that could be incorporated into the regular orientation system rather than it just be a process where I get information after information after information and so on. Yeah.
I'm looking at the students.
Yeah, the IESS has everything people need, but I'm hearing not everybody finds it quickly. How important are the department offices around the campus? I think we're going to have to, students have to be told four or five different ways before they connect with everybody. I think, you know, there's no one way that's going to work. Maybe not even those three ways. But I think you mentioned, sorry, I didn't catch your name, I came in late, but the education department,
Chrissy,
that you connected and they really responded at that level.
Yeah.
And that's really, I think, what we're trying to do is to get everybody on campus be able to respond and help you connect with what you need, not just one office. No one office can do it.
No.
But can you tell me a little bit about your experience with the departments? Because one of my senses is maybe that's another place where students come for various reasons. And if they could help connect better, would that reach more students, do you think?
So
or do you just never go to the department office?
What I'm thinking is that for students, they think they more belong to the department at their own study, as you know, more than to IESS after they figure out how much service IESS is providing. So the first place they may go is to get their registration and then go to their department to meet the secretary, right? And I think that's a special thing for graduate students, just as I mentioned, it's a small population. And then the secretary can remember everyone's name and then can know what I can help you, especially for international students, especially for those very experienced secretary. They know what, they kind of like, as Gloria did, that kind of like have a checklist of what you need to do, who you need to talk with, and things write down for me, and then for me to easy to catch up, and then I will go to the professor, my supervisor, to talk for my you know, academic things, and then I know for my work study permit, and so something like that, I know where I can go. So that's very neat for students, but I know it's another different story for the undergrad students, because there's too many students there, and how many faculty can support them, especially sometimes everyone is busy in the very, very beginning of the semester, right? And the students, especially the students, they, after they went to the orientation, they kind of maybe get lost where to go. So they went to some offices and then, you know, huge campus and can just got lost again.
Thank you, that's helpful. What about the others? The department connection?
To me, I had already made a choice as to what I wanted to be studying. I knew I wanted to get a degree in mathematics, and by the time I came here, I knew I wanted to go into law. So the department was quite helpful because I had communicated to them even before getting admitted into University of Victoria. So it wasn't hard, and they have the Undergraduate Student Society and the Graduate Student Society that was very helpful as well. But to most undergraduate students who come in, they're mostly unclassified in their first year. So it's hard for them to get through to a department and actually make that kind of connection with them. But it'd be easier, like he said, if there was a mentor program where just other students, not necessarily fixed to a particular major, can just talk to them or guide them with certain aspects, I guess. It doesn't have to be a day-to-day, like everyday thing. It could just be once in a while. It could even be just through social networking. It could just be on Facebook or any other source of information for that matter. Like, it's just something that helps. Like, I know a lot of the varsity teams do that with their freshers, like they just help them, guide them, but it would be easier to have a mentor program for those who are not necessarily involved in those teams or those organizations.
I think the thing with the department offices is that they're really helpful, from my experience anyway, if you know what you're going for. If you're more confused and you're just looking for guidance, I think it's a lot more difficult for them to help you because they know a lot. So it's like, well, I hear you coming to me asking me for just general help. It's really hard for me to help you because there's so much I could tell you, but it's hard to get that in the amount of time, especially because they only have so much time to convey that information. So if they could make, I guess, counseling more readily available within the departments, that might be helpful. But otherwise, I don't know. I think it's a great resource, but only if you really know what you want. If you have your questions planned out and you have a set goal in mind, if you plan out, this is what I want to come away with after going to that office, I think you can. It's great.
Yeah, and I think Ram's point about, you know, the students aren't classified, and then when they try to go to advising, you know, you're basically lining up for weeks to try and get an minute appointment, right? Because that's how long they are. And so how can we support these students? The final, I guess, question that topic that we wanted to discuss was communication, right? How to reach out to these students. And I think we've already sort of delved into a little bit, but what is the responsibility of the student, of the different units and departments, and the instructors? Because when we met, we definitely had some ideas as to what the instructor's role should be in communicating either events or opportunities, services, etc. to the student. So maybe you guys want to talk a little bit about that.
Sure. If
what
I
are
might.
Some ideas of like how to improve communication and therefore integration of the students?
Yeah. Couple things that I had in mind from my past experience. One was like a welcome week. Rather than just have orientation over a couple of days, just stack all the information. If I had a whole week where I just went for a couple hours in the morning, just had first day just about my institution, what they do, and what I might be doing over the next course of 4 years or whatever. And then probably the second day, someone from the departments come in and address us. And third day, probably from Rest Life, something like that. And then connected with some other social activity in the afternoon or the evening, so it actually keeps me there and keeps me interested rather than go through the whole day and then I'm just exhausted and just want to go home and sleep and not think about what happened the whole day. And another thing is like have more like a, it'd be hard to call it international week, but a week for the university or a cultural week where like people get to integrate into all systems, like for all foreign students, domestic students, different departments where they do multiple activities. Like it could be from the cafeteria starting to offer different kinds of food over the week and like different departments running festivals just about what they do or what they teach in a more fun sort of way or what career you could probably look at in the future if you went through that field of study. And like at VIU, they run something called an International Week. It's more with the education program there, the Tourism and Recreation Management Program, and the Catering Studies. So what they do is they get the students involved in running all these activities and give them credits for actually running those. So there's a lot of involvement from the students, and a lot of students outside their faculties get to participate in those events as panelists or even audience for that matter. So that integrates the whole campus for the whole week. It's like a festival. Like all of the campus is decorated, there's different events happening. So it just gets me more involved with my campus. I get to learn more in that 1 week of activity than just the 2 days of orientation.
And what is that generally?
At VIU, it's always in the spring term. I've never seen it in the fall term. I've been there 2 years. So it's always around February, March, just a week before or after reading break. Yeah.
Week, right?
Yeah.
Well, sorry. it's early still. I think no matter what we do, it's going to be hard to convey that to the students because there is just so much information you can take before your mind just starts filtering out most of it. And I think most students try to fill most of that up with school, mostly. So I think no matter what you do, really, it's going to be hard to convey everything to the students. But I think if you keep offering it continuously throughout the year in a very open manner, rather than just emails, possibly maybe just more signs around campus than just the completely cluttered bulletin boards, because even then you're kind of only just glancing at it. You're not really taking in any information. We skim a lot, and if something captures our attention, then you got us hooked. If it doesn't capture our attention, we'll never look at it again. But I think in the long run, though, it's up to the student. No matter how many orientations you run, no matter how many emails you send out, it's a student that wants to go there, that wants to take that opportunity, that's going to go there. If they don't want to take it, then chances are they're not going to show up. They're not going to take the effort, because really it's about the student effort that's going to make or break it, really.
At one of their sessions, pre-panel sessions, Robert mentioned that some of the activities that he's planned as a community leader, you know,
they totally flop. They totally tank because just those particular students you're targeting don't want to do it.
But which one was the one that he said was really popular, something about selfies?
Oh, yeah, there's UVic Residence Life does, one of our community leaders is famous for doing a humans versus zombies event.
How would you come up with that?
he was one of my residents in my first year as a CL, and he's just really into zombies. The program basically, it's a bunch of kids gathering around with Nerf guns on campus. I think the first year we did it was in Caddy Bay. And they go to town. They're shooting each other with little, you know, Nerf guns. They're raging and zombies. It's actually been really helpful we've actually gotten at least 3 students tell us that they want to come to UVic, live in residence, because they saw that program. It's, yeah. And it gets hundreds of people out. And it's completely unacademic. And it's just a lot of fun.
But I think as units and departments where we're trying perhaps more academically fun, like how would you even come up with that idea?
You listen to the troublemakers.
Yeah. Talk to the community leaders.
So like I mentioned to you before, that one thing that Office of International Affairs can do is open position, work study positions, for especially for international students, and co-op positions as well, because I mean, yeah, four of us, you're getting input from us, I mean, which is great, but we do not represent the entire international student population, right? So if you have somebody like that, or if you have somebody like me who was an international student and is now a permanent resident, they have more experience, they know what the students' needs are, so they can maybe help you out with planning events and stuff like that. And as far as getting the word out is concerned, I think it's a bit of a laborious process, but maybe you can make class announcements. You know, because I mean, obviously, students don't read bulletin boards and stuff like that, and so that would help you out definitely. And social network is great as well, like Facebook and stuff. But a lot of people like me are actually averse to something like that. I don't have Facebook, so I was just thinking maybe if we had some sort of a live chat feature on our UWIC website where students could just go and ask for help, just like the library has it, right? So you just type it in, your question, you just get a ready-made answer, you know? So something like that would also help you out. So, yeah. And I had something else as well, but I just can't remember anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So
the course that you did where you could have created something?
Oh, yes, the app that we were talking about last time, that sort of keeps you connected with the activities that are going around the campus and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that's also a great idea. And also when last semester, as Paula mentioned, that I was part of diversity program, I was working under ANISA. Last semester, we did a special event just for international students where they could just come to us and just personally just talk to us about their issues. So something like that would also help you out, because now then you're getting one-on-one connection with international students, right? So, yeah.
But to talk a little bit more about the app idea, engineering has a course where you can create.
Yes, yeah, sorry, right? Yeah. So yeah, I'm taking that course right now, Software Engineering 321.
Right.
And basically it's a requirements engineering course where you just gather requirements and you produce like very high fidelity prototypes, you know, so it's almost like a real app. So if something like that could actually help you, so if we could actually, if UWIC is planning on launching something like that, they can get co-op students or even undergrad students to help them out, you know, who are in engineering.
Thinking about having a competition where students could develop an app for iPhones or Blackberries, because most students have iPhones or Blackberries now, or they could get a special deal to Rogers. But just so similar to what the Olympics offered, I don't know if anybody was familiar with those apps. You download them for like 99 cents and it tells you what's happening where all the time. So basically you fill in criteria as to what you're interested in, and you could say a cultural event, you could say varsity sports or, you know, extramurals, whatever, and it would feed information to you based on what your profile is, right? But it's live all the time. So it tells you, you know, at the sub, diversity conference happening at this point. And, you know, to develop an app like that is $6,000 from a professional, right, with all the bells and whistles, which I think is actually not too much. If you then charge the students 99 cents to download it, you get some money back, right? Oh, excuse me, thank you. You can also hold a competition that engineering students could try and develop something like that, right? Mm-hmm. And just get the student body involved as to what could be done. And we're just trying to think of ways to improve communication, because it is lacking, and I think, you know, you guys haven't fallen through the cracks, although perhaps that sometimes you have, but how do we just let everyone know?
Well, I think the app idea is a really fantastic, it's a brilliant idea, because just from a historical and educational aspect, we're entering the born digital era where more children are raised on technology. They know how to use it better than we do. They know how to use it better than than the technology's creators do. So if you introduce that now, more students will use it because they are used to being able to find everything they need online, but they don't want to look for it very mm-hmm. much. So if you have something that basically tells them, you are going to like this because we've analyzed you and we know what you want. It's like Facebook advertising. They target it based on your likes, your interests, even what you're Googling. So if you could develop something like that for you, Vic, I think you would it would increase involvement exponentially.
Yeah. But I think the barrier right now is that we have a huge amount of resources there on campus, but students like me, like international students, don't know. And lucky me, I get into the co-op program now, so the career service. I'm a career ambassador there, so I know what kind of wonderful services they are providing. But for the other students, as my friends, I asked them, "Oh, so are you mandatory to went to the co-op?" And they said yes, and some said no. So have you ever been to that office? And I said, "No, not really." I said, "It's just beside the, you know, the bookstore. Why not come someday when I was in my job dropping shift?" And they said, "Okay, we can do that." And then I told them what we providing, like we can, you know, improve your resume, your cover letter, your interview skills, which are so helpful for the students who are jumping into the job market, right? And also how to apply for the graduate school, and they can help you a lot. But the students just don't know. And then so what I'm thinking is just we have talked a lot about that. So maybe app is one idea. What about some workshops which is provided to a target group? Like, you know, I know some like Sarah and Tia are very need to do that, and Paula as well. So let's improve some international workshops for the international students. And maybe have some students have that experience, no matter bad or good, because a bad experience can teach them to not do that, and the good experience can be a good example to follow. So workshops, I think, is a great idea. And the students can, you know, can arise their interest, as Nancy said, like how to get a PR. Okay, for students who won't do that, they may want to get involved, just according to their needs, right? And do what they really need. And I think, like again, like the services provided by on campus, most of the students, international students, are too lazy to explore. But if we put it in front of them, I think they will enter and just enjoy and then learn a lot.
Any questions from the audience?
Well, can I just ask, just picking up on your point about how to make your approach was in terms of services to let people know more about what the services
were. Yeah, exactly.
How do we think about providing services in a way that is sensitive to international students? And I think in terms of both how we build residence, how we build athletic facilities, mm-hmm. how we, what food we offer, mm-hmm. All those sorts of things. How do we not just communicate it, but how do we in fact build that, the sensitivity into those, both services and buildings?
Well, what I'm thinking is that students, they really, like me, I really want to talk in person instead of, like, you know, call somebody, or sometimes I'm urgent, I will just go to in that office, not without making any appointment. But that may be annoying for the staff because they really have their own schedule, right? But for international students, they don't have the sense of how to do things. But if we can tell them, like, what's the right procedure of that, and also grab some feedbacks after whatever the orientation or workshop, don't make that too wordy, so student will refuse that to answer, "Oh, that's not my top, and it's English, oh, it's another learning session, no, I don't want to." But just to give, like, talk to people and get more information from the students, like what we did today, like the student panel, we can express our opinions, or we can have a BBS, like a bulletin board, like online or on somewhere. Students can post their opinion there to say, and then these opinions can get evaluated or reviewed by the, like, faculty or like the campus leaders or something like that. They know their opinions are important, and then they will provide or contribute more. So then I think the most of the opinion, they won't fake anything, right? So that's very important.
Well, one thing I had that you specifically referenced to improving, I guess, services, one thing that I've noticed, this is a couple of years ago now, so I'm not sure if it's been altered or not, but in the cafeteria services, at least within the residence cafeteria services, the meat isn't kosher. So for a lot of Jewish students that I've, and a lot of Jewish residents that I've had, they're forced, they will, they they can't eat the meat provided. So granted, they can go to the village greens or other, they can try vegetarian options, but it cuts them out completely from, you know, eating meat. So, and then that works, that that alters their diet for their first year, and it can really change that. So, I mean, maybe just not being more open-minded, but trying to, not target, but trying to get an array of cultural and maybe cultural backgrounds and try to acknowledge their differences more and appeal to that difference. If that means, yeah.
Well, I work at the Graduate Student Society here, and one thing I think we really find is that you need to set aside the time to listen. Like, the staff have to have, you have to have enough staff in the offices that they actually can have the time to listen, right? Because, you know, students will come in and they'll have, like, this thing with the MSP that you were mentioning. This is a huge issue. But not only people come in and they don't know, but you have to find out that they don't know. You have to find out that they don't know the health system. I mean, for us, we have some students our office, and it's like incredible. Like, we, people come in and they're like, is Mary here? And we'll say, oh no, she's not here today, and they'll just start leaving. Ask us first, and then, you know, and they're like, you know, I'd really rather talk to Mary. Because Mary understands the health system that they personally are coming from. For example, I didn't know that a lot of people in China go to the dentist at the hospital. So we found that there were some students from major centers in China who were going to the hospital and trying to see a dentist, and we're just completely, you know, and then of course everyone there's really busy, so no one takes the time to listen. Oh, you want to see a dentist? This is how you see a dentist, right? And I think it's the, you have to get through, because people try to be very efficient and polite when they ask you, but they're not always asking the questions they really need to be asking. So you need to sort of, oh, and how's your day? And, like, make some space for people to come in. And no one has the time, right? Like, that's the thing. You have to find a way to make it so the person who's at the front has the time to just ask some questions. Like, and I think that's the grad students, why the grad secretary is so huge. Because that person knows them. They know, after a few weeks, they know, that face is an upset face for you, you know, like, how's it going? You know, and people love the grad secretaries because they have seen everything go wrong before. And they know how it fits, right? But they work with such a specialized group.
I think that was Ram's idea. If you could get more students involved in the orientation, or have the students lead an orientation session, then you could even have, you know, breakout groups into, you know, is it grad studies, is it health, is it academic regulations, you know, living in Victoria, social activities, and just have smaller, more intimate times with the students and some peer mentors.
Just as a comment about in terms of staffing, I'm from the English Language Center, and obviously we will be dealing with international students all the time. It's a little bit of a different scenario from most of you, I think, but we have 5 people in the front that are there constantly, full-time secretaries and clerks that are there to help every student, and they are run off their feet. There's 5 of them and they're constantly busy. So it just gives you an idea of how much is needed, you know, how much knowledge is needed and how much support is needed for students. They are constantly, the students are out the door, you know, and they are there, oh, all day, every day. And like you said, all 5 of our the people in the front know the students, know all of the students. When students leave, they'll give a gift to their teacher and someone at the front that they felt a special connection to. So having that front line is incredibly important from our perspective in making sure that the students get the information that they need, but that there's support there, and they, and students do feel like they can just come in and speak to them. And, so it maybe not everyone has the resources to have that much staff, you know, but that's what we need, and we probably could use more.
And the thing is, when a student realizes that you can help them and that you will take the time, they'll just latch on to you.
Okay.
No, I know I should be going here, but I'm going to go to Sherry because I know that she will help me with, you know, she'll take the time to actually answer all of my questions.
Yeah. And then they tell them about their weekend and what they're doing. And this strange thing that they saw at the club, and, yeah, the real connection.
Yeah, Brown?
Sorry, yeah. Just another thing to add to, I understand there's an overwhelming need because there's a huge number of students. You obviously have like close to 18,000 students and only about 1,000 staff to assist in all ways possible, right? But always the students are looking for experience. We have no experience. When we look for a job, people ask us for experience. And more than 50% of us are looking to at least volunteer to start, right? And like, for instance, in the English Language Center, you could probably take people in the linguistic studies or in people who are majoring in English or in writing to actually assist the students. Like, they don't have to be doing the specialty work, but they could do the initial work where, like, not some of the students don't need the deep end of the work. They could just probably filter there so some of the needs are filled. Like, I guess some of the students in the leadership program could probably assist with mentorship, and students in the recreation program could assist with organizing events. If you make the students more involved, it becomes like a complete setup rather than just the staff running around and organizing everything. So it's not overwhelming for you either, and it's not less communicable to us either. So there's a huge bridge between there, right? Like, it's not just two ends and you're not trying to work, it's just that it's more for you to do and it's hard for them to reach to you too. So it's just
and that's definitely a valid point. Our issue is turnover. We have students that are here for 3 months and then they're gone.
Yeah.
So we don't build that knowledge capability that can be passed on to new students.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely something we need to look
at. And sorry, you had a question?
Well, actually, I have a comment, but more for the staff in the room. I think further to what Paul was saying, the idea that students create connections with us, and I've worked in a few positions on campus, and definitely work with students. I mean, co-op and career now, but I still work with current. And I've seen students who have nothing to do with my current job, but because there's a trust relationship. And I think that as staff, we need to really build our own networks on campus. I don't think that we really sit down and touch base with each other often.
Definitely, because it just seems like even for us, because we're the panel itself is getting so much information from you guys that I don't think we necessarily knew, but it does sound like there is a replication of services throughout campus that we could go to, but it's just not advertised or we just don't know about it. And it really is amazing how much the personal connection can accomplish. I've been a community leader for 3 years now, and I get residents that I had in my first year still coming to me now asking questions just because they feel comfortable asking me those questions. Even international students in my building, they always come to me for advice, like, what do I have to do to get my SIN card? Where do I have to go? And it's the little things too. It's just like, how do I get a cell phone in Canada? Because I've been using my American cell phone for like 3 months and no one calls me. That was me my first year, and it was my residence now. It's just like, well, yeah, I have an American cell phone because I'm an American. Oh, yeah, you don't want to call long distance to contact me? I better look into that. Because I've had to look into it all myself, you know, getting a SIN card for my job, getting that cell phone, I can educate my residents. Like, now remember, get your SIN card. You have to go downtown at this office, bring this information, and they'll help you out. Because the information's there, but it's kind of hard to figure out where to go if you're nervous or if you're perplexed or if you're just overwhelmed with the amount of information you need to sort through. Having someone to tell you, oh yeah, do this, oh yeah, MSP, get that now. no, not tomorrow, now, do it now, here's my computer, use it, here's the website, there you go, bam, done. Having that personal connection, it's just so much, you're so much more comfortable asking for information because you're not embarrassed to ask. I think that's a big thing. If you're embarrassed to ask someone a question, you're not going to ask it. It's the same thing in class, and it's the same thing in life. And if that figure that you have to ask is even someone far older than you, I think there's that intimidation factor, just because, oh, it's a counselor, right? He's here to help, but do I really want to ask him that? It's just building those personal connections, building those comfortable spaces, those positive networks that can really help students.
And I'm thinking like students is are not students, they are social persons as well. Mm-hmm. So maybe get more involved in the communities in town, which is very important to students, not only just to Canadian students, but also international students, right? So they came to Victoria after graduate, where they will go, and how to build their network. Maybe, you know, if we have something like a resource room to tell them what kind of community we have here, and you can go involve and meet people, and maybe to get your service, or you can provide your help as a volunteer. So then through that way, you can build your network. And also, that's very important for international students. It's about their understanding about the life here, and how they can, you know, as what we did in co-op service, okay, how can you, after graduate, how can you do with your degree? So what's your most important thing, just a graduation, maybe finding a job, and so how to find a job, especially for international students, right? And during the first 6 months, they are not allowed to work off campus, but what can they do during these 6 months? If they want to add some, you know, working experience, maybe volunteering, maybe working on campus, maybe go to the work study, but some of them, they really don't know what to do, and they just waste a year and find out, okay, I can't do this actually, or okay, what can I do on my resume? I don't have any volunteer experience here. Like for the ELCA, they have the classroom assistant there for the ESL class. So the students, as an international student, they can go help, right? And also, as Robert said, how to get MSP or how to get your CNAVER card. The students, international students, they can help. They are not just being educated, being helped. Actually, they can contribute, actually. So how to make them more active, more get involved, that's maybe your question.
Okay, so I have to quickly leave, so I have a couple of comments to make before I go. So one thing I wanted to mention is that because professors are also part of the system, they can help communicate these services to students as well. Because I remember when I was taking a course in summer, and I remember my professor mentioning all the services that are offered by computer science department. So she mentioned about women in computer science and engineering. So that's how I found my job under Anissa, and that's how I met Paula. So that was my connection right there. And then she also mentioned about computer science course union and stuff like that. So I think on the first day, I just think it's too overwhelming for students to attend lectures during the first day. And they just like, the professors just try to cram all the material just in first day. And it's just really scary, you know. So I think the professors should just sort of try to introduce themselves and then try to introduce the services that are offered, such as IESs and stuff like that. And also just, you know, just offer some sort of help, some support, like, okay, I'm here. If anybody's having any problems, you can come to me in my office. So I think that would be very beneficial to students. And also students have a responsibility as well, such that they can actually go to professors for help. Not only should they try to make friends with students, but they should also try to make friends with professor, because because they're a great resource. They can help you out with the academic stuff, and also because they can give you a good letter of recommendation should you ever apply for a job or anything like that, right? So they are actually your main connection because they know the services and the department really well. So that's one advice for students as well. So yeah.
I remember when I was an undergrad student, one professor in particular had the first 5 minutes of class for announcement time. So any student that was involved, was, you know, in a student association or knew of an event happening, they could stand up and mention the event or what was going on. So yeah, I think definitely getting instructors involved is key in the whole learning process and integrating students into the communities. Any other questions from the floor? Ask me if you need to.
No, is it time already? Or
can I ask, are you guys still getting emails from the university?
Sorry, be honest, I look at the subject line. If this affects me, I'm more likely to read it. I think that's just regular netiquette nowadays. If the subject gets you, it's going to interest it. It's like, if it's, you know, just... Wow, sorry, I totally went off in three different tangents in my mind without even speaking. I think if the subject appeals to the student, they're going to read it. It happens with me. If it otherwise, it's just, okay, this doesn't seem like it might affect me, delete. Moving on to the next email. And if it doesn't, I think if we got more emails from the university, I think that's both a benefit and a hindrance, because you can sort through those, but then you're going to have more people saying, rationalizing in their mind, does this affect me, does this not? And they're going to make that in a split second, and if it doesn't affect them, they're going to delete it.
The reason that I ask is maybe you heard UBC has a just-in-time email publication. That's what's coming out this week, and we've been experimenting with something similar.
So like an e-newsletter then?
So like, like deadlines, mm-hmm. a week to invent calendar, mm-hmm. that kind of
thing. That'd be great.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and you didn't have time to actually save a little thought after implementing it this year, so I thought I'd ask you.
Yeah, that'd be mm-hmm. fantastic.
Or like even like flash news or something that just goes on in the UX website, or now I guess it's called My UX, you could instead mm-hmm. use source, mm-hmm. just up there, something standard the student needs to know about campus or activities or anything. Just an obvious place for them to look at rather than somewhere that they have to go and find. Mm-hmm.
Beneficial, like a university podcast every week, because I think everyone has iTunes for one reason or another. And if you have that, you know, it's like, oh, UVic's podcast is updated, listen to it, and you get information from that. I think that could be greatly
yeah.
beneficial.
I think the deadlines would be good, but people won't go just for it.
No.
Mm-hmm. They want to see, oh, there's a feature on my department.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
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 Yeah, that'd be great.
Totally.
I just wanted to say thank you for the panel. You always had new ideas for all of us who are trying to connect the dots across the campus. And I also want to say Paul has been organizing similar panels for faculty who are coming to redesign their courses. So these messages are beginning to get out to instructors, but it takes a while, right? Can't get to everybody anytime about anything, all the time, right? You've got to find it as many strategies. But certainly, panels like this are making a big difference, and they're always ranked at the top of the experiences the instructors have over a whole week. And Paula knows this. So your voices are being heard more and more, and I appreciate you taking the time to come and spend time with us.
Thank you.